Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. State legislators have made several attempts to require photo ID at the polls. The last attempt was struck down by a federal court in 2016 when the judges said the law targeted African Americans with almost surgical precision. Well, now the General Assembly is taking a different approach. They voted during the short session to place a constitutional amendment on the ballot this November in which the voters will decide whether the state will require photo ID. Ours is one of only 17 states that don't require voters to show photo identification, and a Gallup poll in 2016 found that 80% of Americans surveyed were in favor of the requirement. 95% of Republicans approved. 83% of independents were on board. Even a majority of Democrats, 63%, believe in voter ID. We're going to take a closer look at the implications of voter ID this hour, and we begin with Lynn Bonner. She's a reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer who has been covering various voter issues in the state for the last several years. She joins us by phone. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks at WFAE.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at charlottetalks. Why, you can even watch one of my guests and I on Facebook Live. So take us back, Lynn, to the beginnings of the efforts in North Carolina to require photo ID at the polls. When did all this begin?
Well, photo ID is something that Republicans have wanted for a long time. They passed a law in 2012 that would require voter ID for the 2016 elections. So that law kicked in for the primary in 2016. In the meantime, there were several challenges to the law that went to federal court. Before the voter ID requirement was in place for the general elections in 2016, the federal courts struck it down, and the Supreme Court refused to reinstate it. So we had a photo ID for one primary in 2016. But this is something Republicans always wanted to bring back. So in this short session of the General Assembly, they passed a ballot referendum, something that's going to go on the ballot in the fall that will ask voters whether they want a photo ID shown at the polls as a requirement to vote.
So we voted for centuries without the requirement for voter ID, haven't we? And so if that's the case, why the sudden feel that we need to have photo identification?
Well, Republicans feel it's going to cut down on voter impersonation. Democrats, on the other hand, say it's a way to suppress the vote.
How do you explain that one party is in favor and the other is not, if there's not a motivation other than the one that's being expressed?
Well, that's hard to explain. You know, the two parties are seeing two different views. On the floor, we heard a lot from Republicans about voter impersonation that was not reported, that their line is that voter impersonation and fraudulent voting is not vigorously pursued and that there are many more cases out there than are reported. Democrats counter with somewhat with an audit that the State Board of Elections did after the 2016 elections and found only one case of voter impersonation that would have been stopped with a voter ID out of 4.8 million votes cast in that election. So really, the parties are looking at voting through two different views.
Do Republicans refute or argue with the findings of that audit?
Not specifically, but they have argued that they have seen voter impersonation, or that some of their allies have seen voter impersonation that has never been reported. The stories have been sketchy. They never say where it happens or when, but there is a general refutation of the argument that it rarely happens.
So there's no real solid empirical evidence that voter fraud or voter impersonation has happened with any regularity that would endanger the integrity of the vote. Would that be fair to say?
I think that would be fair, yes.
On the other side, Democrats are saying that this disenfranchises certain people, the African Americans, a key group, low-income people who may not have driver's licenses or be able to afford to take the time off to go and get other forms of photo ID that might be recognized at the polls.
Yeah.
How is there any empirical evidence that that is true?
There have been cases where elderly people have had a very hard time getting the free IDs that were offered in preparation for the 2016 election. Some elderly people were not born in hospitals, don't have the birth certificate required to get those IDs.
How would they get a driver's license? How would they open a bank account? How would they do many of the other things that we have to have a driver's license for to operate in this country?
Well, there are some people who don't have driver's licenses or and don't use traditional banking. I mean, there are lots of things that would require, we would say, would require a photo ID that people don't have. Especially, you know, I remember one woman who, an elderly woman who moved to North Carolina to be closer to her adult children. She no longer drove and did not have the kinds of ID that were would allow her to get a free ID from the DMV. So she was, you know, kind of got a tremendous runaround trying to get a photo ID, a free ID, before the DMV said, yeah, we really should have given her one.
The latest attempt to require voter ID was struck down, as you said, by the federal courts. And in their ruling, they said the law targeted African Americans with almost surgical precision. Was the court referring only to voter ID, or were there other provisions of that law that they objected to?
There were lots of other provisions in that law, some dealing with where you could vote. If you voted at the wrong precinct, then your votes wouldn't count. It was apparently what the court found was that the legislators looked at the methods that African Americans used most and then outlawed them in that law. So it had to do with a number of other things.
So does that help? Does that help or hurt Republicans when they make the case that this is about voter fraud and impersonation at the voting booth, as opposed to trying to disenfranchise certain groups of people?
You know, that's hard to say. One of the things about this constitutional amendment is we don't really know what the law is going to look like. You know, it's written very broadly so that if the voters decide, yes, we want to change the Constitution to require voter ID, well, what will that look like? One of the things about the law that went into effect in 2016 was that they did not allow, state employee IDs. They did not allow college IDs, even for students who went to UNC and other state institutions. So they restricted it greatly because, and one of the questions was, well, did they not want students who were from out of state but attending UNC administration schools to be able to vote easily? So there may be more restrictions than we know are coming just from reading that constitutional.
And we're going to talk about that later on in the program, because the language that we'll be voting on is not necessarily the language that the amendment will take. We'll talk about that in a little while. After this law was struck down by the court, legislators decide to put the question, as you said, to the voters in the form of a constitutional amendment. Our state is one of only 17 that does not require voter ID, but there are only two states that have enshrined the principle of voter ID in their state constitutions. Which states are in that club, and did they take that approach for similar reasons to our state?
They are Mississippi and Missouri. I'm not quite sure why they decided to put that requirement in the Constitution, but of the other 34 states, only a handful of those have something called strict voter ID, which says that you have to, if you don't have your ID, you have to return to the Board of Elections within a certain number of days to show it in order to get your provisional vote counted. There are about half the states that have some form of voter ID don't require a photo. All you have to do is show that you live where you say you live. So you can bring in some kind of utility bill to show your residence, or some other form of ID. So the strictness of the photo ID is also going to be is also currently an open question until the state legislature comes back in November to actually write the rules.
As this legislation worked its way through the General Assembly, two Democratic proposals were rejected by the GOP majority. What were they, and would they have substantially changed this constitutional amendment provision on the ballot?
Well, one of the questions was, should the IDs be required for people who vote absentee? There's been a reluctance on the part of Republicans to put photo ID requirements on absentee voters.
How would you do that? How would you do that?
Well, that's a good question, and that was never really resolved. But there were questions about whether you could make a copy of your ID and send it in with your ballot. There were, but that was rejected.
Okay. The courts decided. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say that Arkansas, I believe, is going to decide on a constitutional amendment for photo ID this year, I believe, and they have photo ID for absentee voting in their question.
Have they decided how they will accomplish that?
No, they haven't decided.
Okay. The court decided that the previous law targeted African Americans, and opponents of voter ID say that, purposeful or not, many African Americans and other lower economic scale citizens can find voter ID onerous because they don't have driver's licenses. Is there a provision in this amendment to facilitate people without driver's licenses to have access to other officially recognized forms of identification?
It is not in the amendment. There is a they added a clause about the legislature creating some exceptions, but then again, we don't know what those are going to be. Back in 2016, they did have a way for people to get free IDs from the DMV.
Lynn, I've got to stop you there because we have to go to a break. Lynn Bonner is a reporter for Raleigh News and Observer, who's been covering the ins and outs of voter ID in North Carolina for quite a while. Thanks for joining us. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. If you want to get on an airplane, you have to show a photo ID. If you want to buy alcohol, you have to show a photo ID. If you want to apply for a mortgage or rent a car, you have to show a photo ID. If you want to buy certain types of medicine, you have to show a photo ID. But there are 17 states in the United States, including ours, where there is no requirement to show a photo ID when you vote. And the prospect of asking people to do so sets off a firestorm of warnings about what will happen if you do. Are those concerns legitimate? What has been the result of instating that requirement elsewhere? We spend the rest of the hour examining that with Dr. Martha Kropf, professor of political science at UNC Charlotte. Welcome back.
Good morning, Mike.
She joins us in our studio, and with us by phone is Jonathan Brader, counsel with the Brennan, actually by Skype, Jonathan Brader, counsel with the Brennan Center for Justice at the New York University School of Law. That's a nonpartisan law and policy institute that focuses on several issues, including voter rights. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And Donald Bryson is also with us. He is president of the Civitas Institute. That's a nonprofit conservative public policy organization headquartered in Raleigh. Donald, thank you for being with us as well.
Thanks for having me on.
Doctor, let me begin with you. If the Gallup poll I referenced at the very beginning, which shows that most Americans approve of voter ID in order to vote, why are we still having these conversations? Why do we feel it's so important that we have to put it in the Constitution if citizens already say, okay, I'm fine with it?
Well, of course, the problem is that sometimes we have to protect voters or people against the majority. I mean, if the majority believed that women shouldn't be on the radio, then they would be in here arresting me, right? That's why we have courts. That's why we have this process to be able to protect people who otherwise may not be able to protect themselves. So sometimes policies simply are made by the majority, but they're simply not good for the minority. There are protections in place for those individuals.
And we've heard a lot about voter fraud in recent years and the need to take greater precautions to avoid voter fraud, including enacting voter ID. Given the lack of evidence on voter fraud, is this just a red herring? Is there something else underlying these efforts, Doctor?
Well, perhaps, but it's not for me to say whether or not there is something underlying there. I mean, I think we can say that it looks like the court decision in the striking down the photo ID was correct. If you look at what happened, that law, the big 2013 law, passed the day after Section 5, or rather Section 4B, defined covered jurisdictions, but right after the Voting Rights Act coverage that North Carolina had was struck down and all over the South, right? And what used to have to happen was that if North Carolina changed a voting law, it had to be approved either by the D.C. District Court,
right,
or the Department of Justice.
To make sure it was in compliance.
Sure that it wasn't discriminating against minority voters.
Okay.
And so a lot of these laws actually, you know, that were struck down and then reconsidered. South Carolina went through this and did a bunch of stuff and tried to get it to pass, and other states did as well. And So as soon as the court struck that down, literally as soon as they struck it down, so it seemed to be indicative of intent to discriminate because of the timing. They had a less restrictive bill that had been in process before, somewhat less.
Right.
I mean, arguably not. But this was the 2013 law was far more far-reaching, as Lynn alluded, with early voting provisions. Provisions about provisional voting, which I can define in a minute if you'd like. It was a lot more than just photo ID.
Donald Bryson, the Civitas Institute echoes House Speaker Tim Moore, or perhaps he is echoing you, when you both assert that voter identification is, quote, a common sense method of protecting the integrity of our elections. And Civitas goes on to say, or allege, that the media has been spreading a misleading narrative of controversy around the issue. How so?
Well, first off, regarding the controversy, we're unique in public policy groups, not only in North Carolina, but nationally, in that we do regular public opinion polling across North Carolina. We conducted a poll in early June of five different constitutional amendments that were being considered at the General Assembly, one being the Voter ID Amendment. And it came back that 69% of registered voters were in favor of the photo ID amendment as it was written at that time. Of course, it's been amended since then, but 69% is fairly significant. And if you look at Republicans and Democrats, and unaffiliated voters, it's really only controversial among registered Democrats. And even then, they're split fairly evenly, 46% to 47%. But Republicans and unaffiliated voters tend to agree that there needs to be some sort of identification requirement. Now, in terms of whether or not it's common sense, I think it is a fairly common sense approach. Requiring some sort of voter identification would bring North Carolina into the mainstream, with 34 other states requiring some sort of identification to vote. On top of that, three of our bordering states have strict photo ID requirements, Virginia, Tennessee, and Georgia. And if we want to protect the legitimacy of our elections, I think we need to get ahead of the curve.
So if I understood you correctly, the media is misleading the public because we're saying that it's controversial, or we're having further discussions about something that the public at large has already decided they're okay with. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying the media at large. I'm not saying you or all of the media have misled, but I think that people who are opposed to voter ID are getting an outspoken voice for the amount of people they actually represent.
Okay.
In the press.
Jonathan Brader, the Brennan Institute for Justice, is very concerned about voter purges, the practice of removing voters from registration lists in order to keep them up to date. You're not opposed, however, to purging the records for the legitimate purpose of keeping them up to date, but you do worry that they aren't always done with proper safeguards. So in your view, is requiring photo ID to vote a form of voter purging?
Well, it can certainly be a form of voter suppression, especially when you're talking about a strict photo ID law of the type that North Carolina passed and was subsequently struck down by the courts. When you have a law that picks and chooses between certain types of ID that is required and may only allow types of IDs that minorities, African Americans, and others are less likely to have, then you are having a suppressive effect on those populations. So, you know, although it is true that most states require some sort of identification to vote, requiring a photo identification without any sort of opportunity for somebody who doesn't have that ID to sign a statement confirming who they are, without having a broader range of ID being allowed. There's only 7 states that have really strict requirements like that. So if North Carolina goes back in and tries to essentially reenact the law that was already struck down, not only could it be a form of voter suppression, but it also could run into the same legal problems that the previous law did.
Well, Aaron, one of our listeners, emails, this is not about voter ID. It is about suppressing the vote. If it were only about ID, then why did the GOP have so many other restrictions on voting? The president's Voter Fraud Commission found nothing, and it was disbanded. And some, Jonathan, believe that because impersonation fraud is essentially non-existent, and because people in lower economic brackets, especially African Americans and others, tend to vote Democratic, are the people most likely not to have photo ID, such as a driver's license, that requiring one is a clear indication that Republicans are trying to tilt the vote away from their opponents. Is that your take, that this is an effort to suppress Democratic votes?
Well, look, I mean, people have been trying to find evidence that there is significant voter fraud for a very long time. In the 2000s, the Bush administration launched a huge effort through the Department of Justice to try to root out voter fraud. It was very controversial. They ended up firing a state U.S. attorneys because they weren't finding enough fraud. There were resignations. And after all of this, they found an instance of voter impersonation, which is the only type of fraud that an ID requirement prevent, which was more rare than being struck by lightning. So there are not really, an ID requirement is not really the type of thing that can fix the problems we actually have in our election system. Okay. So it's hard to see, if your goal is to make elections safer, why you'd be going with a strict ID requirement.
What about that? How, Doctor, I don't know whether you know this answer to this question or not, but how true is it that impersonation fraud is virtually non-existent?
I don't know that anyone really knows the answer to that question. The investigations indicate that there is very, very little impersonation fraud. The evidence indicates right now, but fraud again, I think if I were, you know, a conservative might make the argument that, well, if it's really good fraud, then we're never going to see it, right? And I'm sure that it strikes you intuition. But I think that what we lose in this is sometimes that we aren't able to balance the costs with the benefits, right? So the costs of voter ID, I think what we need to look at this in a balanced way, right? The costs of voter ID are likely greater than the potential benefits. We, in terms of like fixing impersonation fraud, which as Jonathan mentioned, really we can't seem to find a lot of evidence of it. And it does nothing about by mail voting, and it does nothing about, you know, any other, you know, problems that we have with our election administration system. It can't fix those problems, and it's potentially costly.
And when you look at the example that you gave in your last answer about how quickly voter ID laws were put up to a vote in the legislature after the requirement to check with the voter, with the voting, what's the act that they overturned? I'm sorry.
Section 5 of the Voting Rights
Act. Yes, after they overturned that, we moved very quickly the next day into passing a law about that. When you look at that and you look at allegations by Democrats that they're trying to disenfranchise low-income voters who might vote Democratic, and you look at what some people have said in our legislature about why they gerrymander certain districts so that only Republicans can win, does that strengthen the case that there is a political motivation behind this?
Well, sure, but I want to try and take a more balanced look at this, though, right? I don't want everyone to say, "Well, she's just a Democratic shrill." I'm not. It does seem very indicative. There are at least two studies, one done by some folks at UMass Boston, another PI'd by a fellow at App State, and they both indicate that across the country, more strict laws are passed where there are more, I guess, African American voters.
So, Donald, since you're with the Civitas Institute, and that's a conservative organization, whether or not there is a real motivation behind this that we don't know, that's not articulated by Republicans, and it's just maybe it's just a conspiracy theory. Even if that's not the case, even if that motivation is not true, we do know that this disproportionately affects African Americans and lower income voters. So, in that case, why is this a good idea?
Well, first, there are studies both ways that say that it does affect the income of the turnout of African American voters, and there are studies from places like Stanford University that say that it doesn't. And so that it's really a toss-up. If you look at states like Georgia that has a strict photo ID requirement, African American turnout actually increased after they had a photo ID requirement. But I want to get back to the point about, you know, if this is a widespread problem or not, and opponents of voter ID requirements always say, well, you know, you're more likely to be struck by lightning than to be a victim of voter fraud. But that's the caveat should be that we know of. And I'll give you an example. We're coming up on a midterm election this fall in 2018. In the 2014 midterm elections, the voter turnout in Mecklenburg County, down in Charlotte, was 39%. Only 39% of people turned out to vote. And so there are people who didn't go to vote that somebody may have gone to vote in their name. They don't know to contact the Board of Elections to say, hey, I didn't vote, or somebody's already voted for me. We've got the vast majority of people who didn't vote in that election. It is very, very difficult to investigate and find issues of voter fraud.
So I wonder, though, I mean, you make that allegation like it would happen, but how widespread is that? And why use fear tactics? And if a lot of people did that and it actually affected the election, wouldn't we have heard about it?
I'm saying it's possible.
When you look at the
Virginia House of Delegates had a seat that was determined by coin toss just this past year because it was an actual tie vote. that seat determined the balance of power in the Virginia House of Delegates.
So if you suspect, if Republicans suspect that this is a problem and that it does happen more frequently than we would like to think, as opposed to simply passing a law saying, okay, we're going to cure this with voter ID, which is going to impact a certain portion of the population, why don't we do studies on it? Why don't we investigate it?
I'm not opposed to doing that, but at the same time, the vast
wouldn't it be smarter to investigate it first?
But we also need to be clear that they're not passing the same law they passed in 2013.
No.
We keep talking about the 2013 law, but this is not the same.
No, it's definitely not, but we don't really know. I think voters need to understand that the amendment really doesn't tell us what we're voting on, except for it is photo ID.
Which we're going to talk about in a second. Jonathan, your organization, the Brennan Institute, or Brennan Center, calls for these moves to require greater voter restrictions from photo ID to fewer early voting opportunities, a broader movement to curtail voting rights. Is this, in your view, racially motivated, or is it merely politically motivated, these moves?
There is evidence of both. If you look since 2011, North Carolina is certainly not the only state where we've seen efforts to make voting more difficult. There have been 23 states that have made it more difficult in some way. And that includes things like a lot of things that North Carolina tried to do in 2013. So cutting back on voter registration opportunities, making voter ID requirements more strict. And again, it's not just an ID requirement we're talking about here. We're talking about a photo ID requirement, which is exactly the type of requirement that makes it the case that minority voters are less likely to have those forms of identification. Also, cutting back on early voting, which has been attempted in North Carolina. All of these have a disproportionate effect on minority voters, younger voters, voters with lower incomes, and they do correlate with GOP control of states, as well as increases in African-American and Latino population and turnout in those states.
So when you look back in history at political times in other parts of our history, is there a corollary here? Have we seen this before, Doctor?
Well, this is what we've seen over the last 7 years has been the most significant rollback of voting rights since the Jim Crow era. One of the reasons that the loss of the Voting Rights Act preclearance provision has been so devastating to voting rights is because prior to that requirement, that jurisdictions, including those in North Carolina that have a history of discrimination, prior to the requirement, they had to get federal approval for putting those laws into effect. What you would see is...
Jonathan, I have to stop you because we're coming up to a break. I'll let you finish after the break. Jonathan Brader with the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law.
WFAE is working on a new series about the producers, songwriters, and musicians who call Charlotte their musical home. Submit your name and your music and be a part of our series. Go to wfae.org/cltmusic for more information. Support for this series is provided by Ortho Carolina.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about voter rights, voter ID specifically in North Carolina. We're facing a constitutional amendment on the ballot in November. We'll talk about language in a second. Dr. Martha Kropf is here from UNC Charlotte, where she's a doctor of political science. Donald Bryson is president of the Civitas Institute. Jonathan Brader is counsel for the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law. And I had to interrupt you, Jonathan, in the middle of an answer to a previous question. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Thanks. I'll try to summarize quickly. Basically, what happened before you had the Voting Rights Act preclearance provision is that states would pass one voting restriction after another. And even if one thing was found to be discriminatory and blocked by a court, the state would just turn around and pass something that was similar, and then that would have to be blocked. And while all these lawsuits were ongoing, people would have to deal with these illegal voting restrictions. Preclearance stopped that by putting the burden on the state to show that the laws would not discriminate. But now we don't have that because of the Supreme Court decision. So the fear here is that North Carolina could turn around and enact another discriminatory voter ID law that could go into effect.
And we're not clear exactly what this constitutional amendment will do, and that is because the language that we're voting on will not necessarily be the language of the amendment itself. So, Doctor, explain that. We're going to go to the polls in November. There's going to be a constitutional amendment, among others, that deals with voter ID at the polls. What will that say? What will voters be looking at as they read and trying to make a decision between yes and no?
Well, what it will say is that you're voting for photo ID at the polls, which the polls, I guess, indicate right now. I don't know how the questions are worded, but the polls indicate that voters want. Okay.
Okay.
But what we don't know is then what the state legislature will do to put that into effect. So we don't know if they're going to go and
meaning
say—
Meaning they haven't written the amendment
they
yet?
They haven't said— Well, it's not that they haven't written the amendment, for my understanding.
Okay.
But what they haven't done is said, okay, you can use your North Carolina driver's license. You can use this ID card that's provided. You can use your passport. You can use your federal tribe ID. What they did in the 2013 law, they had a list of the types of IDs that you could use.
So, Donald, I know that you're in favor of this amendment, and I know that you're in favor of voter ID, but isn't this kind of like putting the cart before the horse? I mean, shouldn't we be voting on an amendment, the wording of which we already know and maybe is even printed on the ballot so that we know precisely what we're voting on?
Well, no, I actually don't think that's the case.
Why not?
Well, because technology changes.
What does that mean?
Over time.
What does that mean?
Well, one thing, I think there should be some sort of identification requirement. I'm a little hazy myself on actually putting photography into the Constitution, but I think that we have to be able to give the General Assembly some leeway in how the requirements are crafted. And essentially, this amendment, although it's not worded, and the wording on the ballot hasn't been done because that will be done by three different public officials. But this eventually gives the General Assembly leeway in how the law is crafted. And if they're smart, and, I don't know if politicians necessarily are smart, but if they are, they'll get away from the problems that they had potentially in the 2013 law. Now, I will say that Judge Motz, who was the one who wrote the surgical precision phrase that everybody likes to talk about, thought that providing the free IDs perhaps was a good idea. And her phrase, surgical precision, was not specific to voter ID itself because she thought that providing free IDs in the 2013 law might not hamper voter turnout.
So are you trying to get around the problems we have with the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution, which they referenced in order to have a militia, we should have the right to bear arms? We don't have a militia anymore, and therefore we still want to bear arms. Are you trying to get around that by not including photographic identification in the amendment itself? To make it an anachronism in the 22nd century?
You're a really smart guy, and I got to tell you, I don't really understand what you just asked me.
Well, I'm asking, you said...
Can you ask it again?
No, sure. You said that you don't think it might not be a good idea, because technology changes, to reference photographic identification in a constitutional amendment. Are you trying to get around the problem that we face with the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution that references a militia when it comes to bearing arms?
So this is an anachronistic law, the Second Amendment, Mike would argue, and it's because the wording isn't what we do now.
Yes. And that's what you're trying
to
avoid.
And that's what you're trying to avoid.
It may not be what we do now. I had a reporter from the Fayetteville Observer call me when this first started being debated. He was very upset at first with me, and I didn't really understand why, but he was like, people are able to print fake IDs, and that would be photographic identification. Right. But what if sometime we can do, thumbprint identification or some sort of DNA scanner? Not that that exists right now.
Okay.
And I was like, well...
All right.
Okay, sure, maybe.
I get it. So is this the way most constitutional amendments that are put forth in a referendum are handled, Doctor? Do we normally not know the precise language of the amendment we're voting on?
Well, there's some very precise languages in different states. And
I'm talking about North Carolina in the past.
I don't know.
Okay.
To be honest, that's something I don't know.
So 34 states require voters to show some form of ID. Half require photo ID. The other half allow non-photo IDs. When we register to vote, every one of us is given a voter card, a registration card that tells us where to vote, what precincts we vote in, what districts we vote, district offices we vote for. Why isn't presenting that card, which has our name and I believe our address on it, why isn't that enough? Donald.
Why isn't that enough?
Yeah.
Because mail fraud is something that happens a lot. Also, we haven't come up with a way of printing those just yet that they cannot be counterfeited, whereas we've put a lot of time and effort into the state in putting out photo identification that is not easily counterfeited.
So,
also, I do want to provide a moment of clarity that we know exactly how it will be worded in the Constitution, the amendment. What we don't know is how it will be worded on the ballot.
Oh, okay. So why don't they just put that in the ballot? You're voting on a constitutional amendment that says this.
Because there is a process by which the ballot wording has to be done, and that's going to be determined by the Attorney General Josh Stein, Secretary of State Elaine Marshall, and then Paul Coble, who oversees the General Assembly.
Okay. Jonathan, has there been a measurable impact on voters and on voting where voter ID has been instituted?
Yes, so there's plenty of evidence that where voter ID, especially strict voter ID, goes into effect, those members of communities that are less likely to have it have a much more difficult time voting. There was evidence out of Wisconsin that hundreds of thousands of voters didn't have the ID required by the law. We saw in 2014 in Texas when they had a strict ID law in place. I mean, I spoke to voters personally who told me that they had gone to vote and they had an ID, but it wasn't the one required by the law. They were turned away. So we do know, and there's record evidence in North Carolina, we do know that there's lots and lots of people who are registered to vote who do not have the specific forms of ID that have been required by these laws. We'll have to see, you know, if this goes into effect, we'll have to see what IDs they allow. But if it's similar to what they've done in the past, I think it's likely we'll see the same sorts of problems.
So Representative Tim Moore, the Republican House Speaker here in North Carolina, recently told Spectrum News reporter Loretta Beniti that voter ID requirements do not suppress the vote. Not at all, he said. In fact, he claims, quote, states that have adopted voter identification laws have seen zero decrease in voter participation, and most have seen an increase in voter participation. And although Paul Specht, who is a correspondent for PolitiFact North Carolina at the News and Observer, writes, there is a kernel of truth in Moore's statement, as studies haven't consistently shown a direct relationship between voter ID laws and voter participation. He quickly adds that any claim of being zero decrease in voter participation is a misleading exaggeration, which PolitiFact rates as mostly false. Doctor, what would you say to that?
Well, okay. So I would make the argument that on minority voting, the evidence is still up in the air, right, in terms of suppressing minority voting with voter ID. We don't know. What we do know is that a lot of minority individuals are less likely to have the proper types of ID, and that is going to be difficult. One piece of evidence that I know hasn't undergone peer review yet, but I did hear at a conference, which I thought was very interesting, was that people were going to be, suppressed from going to register to vote because they know that they don't have the right kind of ID. And one thing that we do know that has been shown with empirical regularity mobility, a lack of stability in somebody's life keeps them from voting. Well, this makes it even harder for someone who moves a lot to vote, even harder than it already is to vote.
Well, we
know that it's gotta suppress votes. We scholars are still looking at, and I've seen evidence that says very strong effects on minority voter turnout, and I've seen evidence that said, well, it suppresses turnout, but not necessarily, and that was a Georgia study, but doesn't necessarily suppress minority turnout.
The General Assembly also instituted another measure in the short session, which will take effect for the upcoming midterm elections. It requires early voting sites in the state to stay open 12 hours a day, each workday, in addition to any weekend hours. That didn't pass?
No. I'm shaking my head because I think this is an interesting thing, because what it does is it forces, it seems so not like something a Republican would do. Localities can't determine when it's best for themselves to actually figure out when's the best time to have early voting. They're saying if they're open, they have to be open 12 hours. And they're closing the polls on the Saturday before the election, and that's one of the big days for the Souls to the Polls turnouts. It was enough when they were trying to limit the weekend voting, right, in terms of Souls to the Polls.
And the other problem with the 12-hour requirement, as I understand it,
expensive?
Is
they're not
it's expensive. Some counties can't afford to operate those 12 hours.
And so they won't.
And so they won't. Because if you open, you have to open 12 hours.
Right.
Okay. So
that's my understanding.
So, Donald, the Civitas Institute says that its mission is to remove barriers to freedom so that all North Carolinians can enjoy a better life. Could it be argued that a reduction in opportunities to participate in early voting is putting up a barrier to freedom?
Well, first I want to make a point of clarity that the law, the bill that was passed was amended. I think that was Senate Bill 325, and they are not closing early voting Saturday before the election. That will actually be open. So the polls can go on that day. That's just fine. The second thing is that I think that we are removing barriers to freedom by instilling legitimacy in our elections. There are a lot of people that are concerned about the legitimacy of our elections. There are people that are concerned about voter fraud and things like that, even if it's not widespread. And why in the world would we ever want to have to pass the law after voter fraud has become such a widespread problem that the legitimacy of our elections is in question?
If conservatives and Republicans are so concerned about the legitimacy of our elections, why do they seem to be not as concerned about Russian interference in our election?
Are you really asking me that question right
yes,
now?
Yes, I am, yes.
I don't know. I don't have an answer for you right now. I don't.
That seems to be something that has been empirically proved to be the case, and something
sure.
that played a role in the 2016 and will most likely play a role in the 28 midterm elections and possibly the 2020 presidential election.
I don't understand why we're so concerned about
something where there is no evidence of voter fraud or impersonation, a tiny, tiny bit, but we're not concerned about the other thing.
I'm sorry. There's an investigation on Russia right now, right? Like there's a Robert Mueller special counsel. Like that's happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And have I or the Civitas Institute written anything that about the Russia investigation that we don't care about it?
I'm just reflecting the Congress.
No, I think you're reflecting me as a Republican, which I'm not.
Okay. Let's talk about making voting easy. We don't seem to make voting easy for people in this country. Other Western democracies do. They don't just have Election Day on Tuesday. They have it on weekends. They have other opportunities to vote. Some vote by mail. Oregon votes by mail, I believe. Why do we seem to make things difficult for voters?
I don't know that we necessarily do make it difficult for
voters.
Well,
why are we making it easier? I guess.
Well, okay. Let me grab this because I mean, we didn't used to have voter registration, and we do now. And arguably, that's administratively easier. Although North Dakota seems to have no problems with not having voter registration, but I mean, we used to not have it. That is a common sense sort of a thing that can cut down on fraud, but it does make it harder for voters to vote. And so, what we always have to do with public policy is balance the costs and the benefits. Something like voter registration makes a certain amount of sense, right? Because it gives those election directors a way to figure out what's going to happen on election day, right? So that is something that makes it harder to vote. But when we start doing, we do need to worry some about doing things that make it so difficult for voters that they may be suppressed from voting. I mean, we shouldn't make voting a meritocracy. You shouldn't have to worry so much about something that is so vital to your life, right? That it's so important, at least as a political science professor, I think.
So, Jonathan, in the 30 seconds that I have left here, is there a way to make, since most Americans seem to favor photo ID at the polls, is there a way to make it easy for people to get the right documentation inexpensively?
Well, there already is an ID requirement in federal law in the Help America Vote Act, which allows for a broad range of IDs, including things like utility bills and things that people who may not have a driver's license will still be able to show something and demonstrate who they are. So it's, you know, I don't think there's any evidence that any ID requirement is really necessary because there's just not significant evidence of the specific type of fraud. But if you do want to have an ID requirement, you can have a broad one with lots of options. You don't need to cherry pick and only select those types of IDs that don't have.
So Jonathan Brader is the counsel for the Brennan Center for Justice at the New York University School of Law. Donald Bryson, president and CEO of the Civitas Institute in Raleigh, and Dr. Martha Kropf, professor of political science at UNC Charlotte. Thank you all for the hour. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.